From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. I'm willing to bet that all of us have, at some point, even if just for a moment, wished we were someone else. It's just human nature, and it's not just people who are dissatisfied or struggling. Even an internationally successful, best-selling crime novelist with legions of fans might occasionally feel that way.
I'm like a lot of crime writers that I know, mystery writers, we're frustrated rock stars. We'd much rather be fronting a successful rock band.
That's Ian Rankin, author of the hugely popular John Rebus thrillers. Here at Soundcheck, we love to talk about music, and some of our most interesting conversations have been with people who are not musicians. Authors seem to have a lot to say about the music that inspires their work, so all this week on the show, we're going to feature some of our favorite interviews with writers, novelists mostly. In the days ahead, you'll hear from Juno Diaz, Jonathan Lethem, Jennifer Egan, Colin McCann, and other members of the Soundcheck Writers Club. Also on the show, Lila Foy is an English singer-songwriter who we first heard in an online performance in the back of a London taxicab.
I wish that I was leaving for somewhere safe.
Lila performs under the name Wall, and when the producers of that Black Cab series started their own record label, Wall was their first signing. Today, she plays in the slightly larger confines of the Soundcheck studio. But first, there's a popular series of crime novels starring John Rebus. He's a cantankerous, slightly boozy, but ultimately lovable police detective who definitely plays by his own set of rules. And for a fictional character, Rebus also plays pretty good music while going about his business. We've asked the man who created Rebus, the Scottish author Ian Rankin, to talk about music both on and off the page. Ian, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you very much.
So this is the return of a long-loved character who you attempted to retire some years ago. Sort of shades of Arthur Conan Doyle with Sherlock Holmes. Was just the demand so great that you had to bring him back?
Well, the reason he retired wasn't that I was fed up, bored with him as a character, or didn't have any further use for him. It was just in real life, he had reached the age of 60. And if you're a police detective in Scotland, you had to retire at 60. But I knew in my heart what he was doing, and he was working as a civilian for the police on cold cases. There's a real unit in Edinburgh that is staffed by three retired cops and one serving cop. He was doing that. So when, 5 years after retiring him, I got an idea for a story that was a cold case, I thought, oh, I can bring Rebus back. Mm. And it happened to coincide with the police in Scotland starting to think about changing the retirement age, so the old guys can apply to come back in again.
Now, this might be a good time. I'm sure this is a question that you've been asked in many variations over the years. But, you know, your stories are so rooted in real jobs, real offices, real cities, real roads, real little towns. Why is the character given such a kind of non-Scottish, you know, a name like Rebus?
Well, when I wrote the first book, I was a student. Majoring in English literature, I was doing a lot of deconstruction and post-structuralism theory. So to me, writing a novel was a bit like playing a game with the reader. Mm-hmm. And a Rebus is a puzzle. It's a picture puzzle. And in the very first book, he's getting sent picture puzzles through the mail that are supposed to mean something to him. So I thought, hey, I'm going to be smart. I'm going to call him Rebus. It means puzzle. He's solving a puzzle. It was only meant to be one book. It was never meant to be a series. So I didn't think it mattered. Mm-hmm. And then years later, I met a guy in a pub in Edinburgh who introduced himself as Joe Rebus. And he said, oh, I thought you got the name from the phone book, you know, the telephone directory. So I said, I'd never looked in a telephone directory. He said, well, I'm there. So we got the telephone directory from behind the bar. And sure enough, Rebus, J for Joe. And his address is Rankin Drive.
No.
Yeah. So that's what he thought was, and it was just a complete coincidence.
Wow. And was he the only Rebus in the phone book?
Him and his son were the only two. It's a Polish surname. It's a fairly common surname in Poland, apparently. So late on in the Rebus series, I actually mentioned that Rebus has Polish roots. I didn't know until then.
So you're sort of still discovering things about this guy as you... That's as you
why,
make him up.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I keep writing books about him, is because I keep finding out more and more about him. The only way I can find out more about him is to keep writing books about him.
Now, his musical tastes, they're not exactly your musical tastes. He's a little older than you. But you've really sort of, you know, given us a great window into his soul with the kinds of music that he listens to as he's getting in the car, ready for a long drive, or after a hard day in the office. One of the songs that you picked for us today is Elvis Costello's Watching the Detectives. And aside from the detectives in the title, I was sort of wondering why you picked that. And then it occurred to me that this whole book starts with a mother coming up to John Rebus in his office, and she is ready to hear the worst about her daughter's disappearance.
Sure. I mean, when I got the idea for the book, it was a book about a parent who couldn't let go of a missing child. So a decade has passed. The child has never turned up again. The parent can't give up the search. So she goes to the cold case unit and says, look, I hope you've still got this on your books. I hope you're still working hard at it. And she happens to meet Rebus, and he gets involved in the story. The Elvis Costello track is just because it's A, a great tune, B, he's a great performer, but C, it's if you're a crime writer, there's some genuinely good writing in that song.
Oh, man. You
know? I mean, it takes you straight back to noir, it takes you straight back to Chandler and Hammett. You know, the femme fatale is in there. She's, what is it, she's filing her nails
while they're dragging the lake.
I mean, that just sets up this image that's almost an archetypal image from American crime fiction. So I just love it. I just thought that Elvis Costello captured the mood and the atmosphere of a certain kind of crime writing.
Ian Rankin is my guest on Soundcheck. Here's that Elvis Costello song.
She's filing her nails while they're dragging the lake. She's watching the detectives. Oh, he's so cute. She's watching the detectives.
Costello's Watching the Detectives, the parents who are ready to hear the worst about their daughter's disappearance. That kind of sums up the story in Ian Rankin's book, Standing in Another Man's Grave, which has just been released here in the States. It's the return of his beloved character, John Rebus, and he sort of comes to loggerheads with the character who has sort of replaced him in your recent writing. So it's Fox versus Rebus.
Yeah, I mean, having retired Rebus, I still wanted to write about cops. I think cops are really interesting characters. And a detective, a cop of that level, allows you to explore every layer of society, from the people at the top, the politicians, the business corporations, to the people at the bottom, the dispossessed, the disenfranchised, mm-hmm. the desperate. One character allows you to do that. So I invented Fox to take over from Rebus.
Now, the characters, you know, it's very difficult to kind of spell out all of these things, you know, class and family and, you know, where a person is on the social and cultural strata. But music does it.
I mean, with Rebus, you know, for me, it's a really good shorthand. When he goes to his record collection, if you've never read a Rebus book before, suddenly you start to get an inkling of the type of personality you're dealing with. As you say, class comes into it. He prefers the Stones to the Beatles, so that seems to be a kind of blue-collar thing, although the Stones were the more middle-class band, as it turns out.
Yeah.
He's a bit of a loner because he'll reach for the Van Morrison or the Leonard Cohen. He's not a gregarious party type. You know, he likes mm-hmm. to listen on his own. He's quite introspective. So yeah, the kind of music he listens to gives you his age. Again, to go back to the Stones thing or Rory Gallagher, you get a notion of what kind of age this guy might be. So you've got his roots, you've got his class, you've got his philosophy of life, all encapsulated in his music collection. And that's why, you know, I really get frustrated now when I go to people's houses, visiting people, and I go, where's the record collection? I need to look at your albums to find out what kind of person you are. And the same with books. You know, you used to go to people's bookshelves and you'd go to their LP collection, you'd flick through both, and you would get a sense of the kind of person you were dealing with.
Right. You know, our record collections, the music that means something to us, is it's more than just something we like. It's like, if you don't like my music, it's like you don't like my friends. You don't like the kind of person I am.
Yeah, there is something in that. Although opposites do often attract. I mean, my wife has not got the same musical taste as I have. She doesn't listen to much music, and that was true even when we first met. We've known each other since 1981. But that, you know, she doesn't mind that I play stuff in my office all day while I'm working. Mm-hmm. She just goes off and does her own thing.
Now, what do you listen to while you're working? What can you listen to when you're writing?
Well, yeah, it's got to be instrumental. So electronica, some prog. I mean, going back to stuff like bands like Tangerine Dream. Tangerine Dream would be very good. It can have lyrics as long as I can't make out what the lyrics are. So The Cocteau Twins are okay because I can't make out what the heck she's singing about. So that's fine. A little bit of jazz sometimes, a little bit of Coleman Hawkins, which is really nice, gets you in a nice sort of frame. I'm not really listening to the music. I've not got it turned up. The volume's not turned up very high. It's just, it creates a bubble. Mm-hmm. It puts me in a space that's my own space. It shuts out the world around me. So, you know, I can't hear what's happening out in the street, or if a telephone rings, maybe, you know, it doesn't interrupt me as much because I'm in this space. And my wife comes in and she says, how long have you been listening to that album for? Because I can put an album on repeat for 10 hours because it's just really playing in the background and I'm not really listening to it. But, I've got sort of certain albums that are, you know, that are my lodestone. If the writing isn't going well, I stick on one of these albums. Brian Eno, Music for Airports, is another good one. And his new one, Lux, is excellent as well for writing to. And it just gets me in a zone and I can start to write.
Speaking with Ian Rankin, the crime novelist behind the popular series starring the detective inspector John Rebus. The latest novel, the 18th in the series, is called Standing in Another Man's Grave. It's out now here in the States, and we're talking about the role of music in his books and in Ian's life. And Jackie Levin is a musician who, obviously, you know, and John Rebus is like really into this guy. Mm. You know, very early on in this book, he mentions, in fact, the title is A Mondegreen,
it's
Misheard
Mondegreen.
Lyric.
Yeah, I love Mondegreens. I mean, I'm terrible for mishearing lyrics. I've done it all my life. You know, my ears are alight. Excuse me while I kiss this guy. I've misheard all of them, you know.
There's a bathroom on the right.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. I love them. They're great. They're puns. Jackie was a guy who I thought, he was in a band in the 80s, Doll by Doll, who were quite a kind of confrontational new wave band, took no prisoners. Then he was attacked one night in London and he lost his voice and he got very depressed and he turned to drugs and eventually weaned himself off drugs. He started up a charity and he started to sing and write music again. And this time he was looking at the Celtic stuff. He was going back to the kind of role of the troubadour. Mm. He was writing very muscular lyrics. He was writing about lost love and hard men, tough men who couldn't show their feelings. And I thought Rebus would love this guy. So in one of the early Rebus novels, Rebus has listened to Jackie Levin LP. What I didn't know was he was a fan of the books. He's on an airplane heading to a gig, he's reading a book and he sees himself mentioned. So he gets in touch, we start to talk to each other. Eventually we did a show together called Jackie Levin Said, which was a 45-minute short story that I wrote on the themes he deals with, and he did some songs to go with it. Mm-hmm. So in late 2011, I'm starting to write the new book and we're supposed to be doing some gigs together, and he takes ill and he dies very suddenly. And this was just at a time when I was starting to write this book. So I was listening to his albums, and there was this one song, I Was Standing in Another Man's Grave, I Was Standing in Another Man's Grave. I thought, whoa, that's a great title. Then I looked at the lyric sheet, I was mishearing it. It was Standing in Another Man's Rain. Mm-hmm. But by then, I had my title. I said to my publisher, the title of this new book is going to be Standing in Another Man's Grave. And my publisher said, no, it isn't. It's far too long. cut it down to something manageable. So I went and did some research and I said to them, look, I've discovered it's got the same number of letters as The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. And that didn't do any harm, did it? So I was able to have my Jackie Levin title.
And your character, Rebus, does exactly the same thing that you did in real life, which is here's what he thinks of the words, reaches for the lyric sheet, sees that that's in fact not the...
Yeah,
the...
and he's just been to a funeral, which is why it resonates with him. And it resonated with me because Jackie had just died as well.
Yeah. This is the late Scottish singer and songwriter Jackie Levin with the song Standing in Another Man's Rain.
Every man has his flower, though he knows it or not. From the mighty old English rose to the humble forget-me-not. Humble forget-me-not. I'm standing in a working-class gay bar in Hamburg, drinking ice-cold beer. Men quietly talking to each other. How did I get here? How did I get here? I look out the ancient window. It's Christmas time in the street. I see women shopping. Some are broken, some are chic. Some have got the North Sea paint from standing in another man's rain. Standing in another man's rain. Standing in another man's rain.
Standing in Another Man's Rain is the song from Jackie Levin, late Scottish folk musician. And a misheard lyric gave rise to the title of Ian Rankin's latest novel, Standing in Another Man's Grave, the 18th in the series featuring Detective Inspector John Rebus. And Ian Rankin with us here in the Soundcheck studio. You mentioned having done a recording with Jackie Levin. Music goes back. I mean, you were a would-be musician yourself, right?
You know, I'm like a lot of crime writers that I know, mystery writers. We're frustrated rock stars. We'd much rather be fronting a successful rock band. And I had my goal when I was... Well, actually, you know, when I was 11, 12, I invented a band in my head called The Amoebas.
Mm-hmm.
And I was their lead singer. I was Ian Caput. And I wrote their lyrics, and I designed their album sleeves, and I did a top 10 every week, which meant inventing 9 other bands and the personnel from those bands. And I would organize their tours, and they would go on chat shows, and I would script the chat shows for them. I was creating this world, this alternative world that was like, you know, wish fulfillment. And then when I was 17, 18, I was in a new wave band called the Dancing Pigs. I was the vocalist. Singer would be putting it too strongly. But that got it out of my system a little bit,
yeah.
A little bit. And sadly now, I think at the age of 52, stardom does not beckon.
Well, but the idea that at the age of 10 or 11 that you were already, you know, in a sense preparing for what has become your life's work.
Yeah, I mean, I was fictionalizing everything, you know. I'd read a lot of comic books at that time, Batman, Superman, Spider-Man, and I would create my own. I would get bits of paper and fold them in half to make little booklets and, you know, break them up into squares and put little stick people in them and speech mm-hmm. bubbles. It wasn't enough for me to be a consumer. I wanted to create this stuff as well, whether it was music, whether it was song lyrics, whether it was cartoons. And, you know, by the time I got to university, I was in the band, I was writing poetry, the poetry was becoming the song lyrics. And then the poems, I noticed, were telling stories. They were not emotion recollected in tranquility, which is what Wordsworth said poetry was. Someone went here and this was a consequence. So it was natural to me to move to fiction, to move to prose. And the prose got longer and longer until the first one became a novel.
And yet you have been able to sort of scale back to song form on a couple of occasions.
I've written some lyrics. Yeah. I mean, I wrote some lyrics for a young Edinburgh band called St. Jude's Infirmary. They wanted a song about nighttime in Edinburgh, and they got me to do the lyrics. And I've worked with a couple of people. I've worked with Aidan Muffett, who's used to be in a band called Arab Strap.
Mm-hmm.
And we did a song together called The Sixth Stone, which was about the sixth member of the Rolling Stones, who was born not too far away from where I grew up.
Is that the keyboardist, Ian Stewart?
Yeah, who was very happy to be in the background. But I like that notion of someone who's on the periphery of something amazing. But they're quite happy to be there.
Let's hear a little bit of that song. It's called The Sixth Stone.
From beggars through to exile, he dug out rhythms like black diamonds. But cruising down Route 66, did you dream of lochs and highlands?
A little bit of The Sixth Stone, a collaboration between Aidan Moffat of the band Arab Strap and my guest, the crime novelist Ian Rankin. That's going back to, what, about 5 years?
Yeah, probably. It was a nice project. I forget whose idea it was, but they got writers and they paired them up with musicians. And it was my misfortune to get Aidan Moffat, who's a genius lyricist. You're writing lyrics for a guy who writes amazing lyrics. But he did a really nice fist of it. And we, a few years ago now in New York, we were in New York at the same time, and we actually did it live on stage in a Barnes & Noble, which was quite fun. And halfway through, he forgot the words, and so did I. So that was the end of that.
Have you seen the sort of all-star novelist band, you know, the Rock Bottom Remainders, Stephen King and Amy Tan and Dave Barry and all.
I've seen versions, at various writers' conventions. And, you know, in the UK we had plans to do our own one, but it's never quite come off.
Well, that's what I was going to ask, is if you had plans to do something
I mean, it seems like none of these writers' bands are looking for a bad vocalist. I'd have to be at the back shaking a tambourine, I think.
Ian Rankin sharing a playlist with us here on Soundcheck today. Let's move on to John Martin, who, you know, sort of had a moment, especially in the early 70s, it seems. You would have been very young, you know. This would have been more a John Rebus, you know, as opposed to you.
Well, it was a friend of mine at high school introduced me to Solid Air. And at the time, I was into sort of rock. I was listening to Status Quo and the sensational Alex Harvey Band. And I thought, well, it's a bit jazzy. It's not quite my thing. But it got beneath my skin. And, you know, like a few months later, I found myself buying the album. And it became this totemic thing for me. Whenever I move house now and I set up the hi-fi system, the first record that goes on the deck is John Martin's Solid Air. And I saw him play live. And there was one time I was in London and I saw him sitting outside a bar with friends, and I thought I could go over and say something, and I never did. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, then he died, and that was the end of that. I was never going to get the chance to tell him how big a fan I was. But Solid Air is such a beautiful song. It's a terrific performance. He was one of these larger-than-life figures, you know, who you would love to have stood at a bar with just for half an hour, just before he got dangerous.
Here is John Martin with that song, Solid Air. John Martin and his song Solid Air. Ian Rankin's playlist on Soundcheck today. Ian Rankin's latest novel is called Standing in Another Man's Grave. It's just out here in the States. And Ian, you were talking about how you can listen to instrumental music when you're writing, or music with vocals if you can't make out the lyrics. I'm sure at this point you know every word to that song, but as I was listening, I was like,
it's very woozy. It's a very woozy song. Yeah, I like that. I mean, I like the way he slurs the vocals.
Yeah.
I think it's supposed to be about Nick Drake, who was a good friend of his, and Ooh. It was written after Nick Drake died.
Oh, okay.
So the kind of person in the song is supposed to be Nick Drake, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Who died in 74?
Yeah, which was just about the time the album came out, I would have thought.
Yeah. All right. So Ian Rankin sharing his playlist with us on Soundcheck today. This Mortal Coil... there's a band that has 90s written all over them.
Well, they weren't really a band, were they? It was a project put together by a record company boss. But he managed
this
to cherry pick.
This was 4AD Records.
Yeah. He managed to cherry pick his artists from his roster and put them together in interesting ways. It's a brilliant cover version of a great song. And Isabel Fraser from Cocteau Twins is singing it. I mean, it is the Cocteau Twins doing it. And she really makes it her own. She's got a great voice anyway. It's mm-hmm. a shame that she doesn't do much. She just headlined some shows in London. I think called Meltdown, where they get an artist
right.
and they give them free rein to
right.
choose whichever artist they want to come and play on the bill, and then they do a little concert themselves. And apparently she was on blistering good form. She's a nervous wreck, which is why she doesn't do live stuff very often.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the Cocteau Twins were supposed to reunite to play the States a few years ago, and she pulled out at the last minute. But it's a song that I could never grow tired of, and her voice. I mean, I would listen to her recite her shopping list.
The song is Song to the Siren, which is a cover of a Tim Buckley
yeah.
song.
Yeah, and many people have covered it. I mean,
yeah.
It's one of those things that any singer, to prove their chops, will try and cover that song. But no one's ever done it with the kind of same intensity and the emotion that she brings to the performance.
From the project called This Mortal Coil, this is Song to the Siren.
On the floating shipless oceans, I did all my best to smile to your singing eyes and fingers drew me laughing to your heart, and you sang, said to me.
This Mortal Coil, the name of the project put together, featuring a bunch of the artists who recorded for the 4AD record label back in the late 80s, early 90s, and featuring there the vocals of Elizabeth Fraser from the band Cocteau Twins. Song to the Siren, a cover of an old song from Tim Buckley, who here in the States these days, Ian, is probably these days best known as the father of the late Jeff Buckley.
Yeah.
Great singer himself. You're very much an Edinburgh person, aren't you?
Well, I mean, it's a city that, consumes me. I never get tired of writing about it. I love to explore the place. It's a small city. It's the size of a decent-sized town, 500,000 people, but all the amenities of a city, but it feels like a village. Everybody
yeah.
knows everybody.
I mean, there's a lot of great music coming out of Scotland, but it seems like a lot of it is coming from Glasgow. What's the scene like in Edinburgh?
Well, Edinburgh's not got much of a music scene, it's true. I mean, Glasgow Art College gave us the Blue Nile and has given us many other bands since then, and lots of great actors as well. The stuff happening in Fife, which is where I grew up, so just north of Edinburgh, maybe 30, 40 miles north of Edinburgh, you'll find the Fence Collective. And the Fence Collective operate at a tiny fishing village called Anstruther. And they're headed by a guy called King Creosote, Kenny Anderson. And he is starting to make waves now. He's starting to get noticed by the major labels. He's starting to get noticed by the Mercury Prize and various other music mm-hmm. prizes. But there's a whole bunch of them. Pictish Trail is another one. They've usually all got kind of fake names. And they're making great music. And they put on shows, they put on festivals, they press their own albums, they help each other out, they guest on each other's albums, they tour together. So there's a real buzz about that. And they're showing that you can do it without a major label, and you can do it just as a kind of homegrown product, and it means you've got complete control.
Didn't King Creosote do a record with John Hopkins?
John Hopkins, Diamond Mine. Yeah.
Beautiful record.
Yeah.
Really.
Too short. It's
yeah,
only seven
yeah, it was
tracks.
Like an, it was like an EP, yeah.
I won't let you fall.
So at this point, Ian, I need to ask you a tough question. Best album of 2012?
Well, the one that was the most pleasant surprise, and you know, because a lot of people I like brought albums out and I liked the albums, but I hadn't heard this band Django Django. And there is a real Scottish connection there. One of them is related to a guy from the Beta Band. And it sounds very Beta Bandish, I have to say, this album. But it's great. It's electronica, it's poppy, it's catchy, it's relentlessly good. I don't think there's a bad track on it. And it's their first album. I just hope they can repeat the process with their next album.
You thought you'd set the bar. I never try to work it out. We just lit the fire.
My guest has been Ian Rankin, the crime novelist behind the popular series that stars the detective inspector John Rebus. The latest installment is the novel Standing in Another Man's Grave. It is out now. Ian Rankin, this has been a lot of fun. Thanks.
Thank you.
That's the Scottish band Django Django from their self-titled debut, one of Ian Rankin's favorite albums of last year. I spoke with Ian back in January. Our Soundcheck Writers Club series continues tomorrow with music picks from Juno Diaz. Plus, Jennifer Egan talks about her rock novel, A Visit from the Goon Squad. Up next, an in-studio performance from Lila Foy, better known as the singer-songwriter Wall. This is Soundcheck.
Seen in a magazine, left on a pavement, taking it underground, needed to save it.
I'm John Schaefer. Here at Soundcheck, we're big fans of the music video series known as the Black Cab Sessions. The concept is pretty simple. You take an artist, you stuff them into the back seat of one of those old black taxis in London, and then film them performing while the cab drives around. In the background, you're hearing the installment that features the British musician Lila Foy, who performs under the name Wall. We'll talk more about this session in a moment, but first, Wall and her band are going to perform in the slightly comfier confines of the Soundcheck studio. Here's a song called Shoestring.
Try to all that I know I've given in when for a breather made me a teaser. Put me in a league of mine.
That's the song Shoestring from the English artist known as Wall. That's Lila Foy singing and playing the electric guitar with Dan Bell on keyboards, Ollie Deacon on bass, both of them adding some backing vocals here in the Soundcheck studio. Lila, welcome.
Hi.
So the name Wall, is that your, is that like a musical persona name or is it a band name? How big a group of human beings is covered by this wall?
Well, it could be anything, but it's just the name of this project and these songs. And I was starting to write in a slightly different way, so I thought it needed a sort of a name to define that.
Mm-hmm.
And so right now it's just three of us when we're playing live, and it's me writing the songs.
Okay. And you say you were starting to write in a slightly different way. Different from what? And,
right,
and different
so,
how?
I was performing in a couple of bands, and I was playing guitar, but I wanted to sort of break away from writing with guitar and also writing with the confines of a band, mm-hmm. as a sort of, right, we have to play this with these particular instruments. So it was just starting to write with none of that there at the beginning.
Yeah.
And then when people started to listen to what we were doing and pick up on it, of course we had to form a live band, but it very much came from the recordings first, and then, right, how do we play this live?
So, you know, it's interesting. You said you didn't want to be, like, writing with the guitar and stuff. I mean, I've noticed that you can often tell when a composer is a guitarist because their harmonic sense will be slightly different from a composer who's a pianist.
Yeah.
So do you find that if you write on the guitar that you tend to fall into certain kind of patterns and stuff?
Absolutely, and I'm playing guitar now, but when I'm writing the songs, I'm normally starting with a very simple like organ drone or just a bass line or something that doesn't have too many melodic hints there, so that when I'm writing there's no... It's not obvious what the melody's going to be from the chords.
Right.
Because with the guitar, if you're playing a normal, you know, chord progression, you can very much hear the melody that's there, so I'd rather take that away. And then I think it's made the melodies a little bit more creative and a little bit more imaginative.
So the melodies come from you and they're not suggested by the instrument all
exactly.
of a sudden.
Exactly, it makes you work a little bit harder, I think.
Oh, that's... Now, the I mentioned the Black Cab sessions in the introduction.
Mm-hmm.
You did the song Magazine in the back of one of those big black London taxis.
We did.
I'm hoping you were a little more comfy here in our studio today.
Absolutely.
What was that? I mean, for folks who have not, you know, seen the Black Cab sessions, it is literally, as I said, you know, you get picked up, you put in the back seat, and then what happens?
Well, we had a sort of sound check in the back of the cab, but all the while, you have to remember that the meter's going as well.
Yeah.
So this could get quite expensive. The back of a cab has never felt smaller because when you go in them, you know, just on the way to a party or on the way home, feels pretty palatial. And yeah, not so much. I mean, Dan's playing with his pedals and various things, and it was so hot. It was midsummer's day. There was a light in our faces, and yeah, it was tiny. I think I had to sit in between Ollie's legs just to make it possible on one song.
So, and it has to be acoustic, right? Because you can't plug anything in.
No, we did actually plug. They have one. I think all our electronics were running through the cigarette lighter.
Oh.
So you can... I think that's what we did. Is that right? So we had... Yeah, we had some... we didn't actually play acoustic. We had the electric guitar and our keyboards, which aren't acoustic, but obviously the sound's coming out of there,
right.
out of the speakers. So it was a little bit of both, and our voices are obviously just into the cab, so it's... It's pretty stripped down, to say the least.
And what did your driver think of all this?
Oh, he was so sweet, Mark. Oh, he was lovely. He introduced us in his very London accent, and it was really sweet. He came to our first gig a few weeks after the session
nice.
And came to say hi. Yeah.
Now, one of the reasons I mentioned the Black Cab sessions, not only because they're just such great ways of being introduced to bands. I first saw Johnny Flynn, in fact, in a Black Cab
session.
Right,
he was one of the first, yeah.
He was, I think, yeah, he might have actually been the first.
Yeah.
But now the folks who have done this, and by the way, they're in the cab with you with the camera and all that, so it's one very crowded London taxicab. They've started a record label, and you are the first signing to that record label.
Indeed.
So is this going to be like an old school record label with, you know, contracts and touring, or is it basically, are they leaving you to your own devices and just you know, a place where you can release records?
Yeah, they've just been really helpful kind of with this setup, with sort of introducing us to the industry. And it's been nice to use like their contacts, and also their kind of, people really respect them as an
entity.
As an entity, exactly.
Do they have a studio other than the back of a hurtling London taxi cab?
No, but luckily I record everything at home in my home studio, so I don't have to record in a cab, although it would make quite a nice office. Yeah. It would.
We're speaking with Lila Foy, who records under the name Wall, and so you've been writing your own pieces. You've turned heads initially with some covers of songs from the 60s, like Where Did Our Love Go by the Supremes, the folk singer Karen Dalton, one of her songs called Something on Your Mind. So, you know, this is music that's way before you were born. What, is there something in the 60s that in that music that appeals to you?
Yeah, I love the 60s. I love all the music that came out of the 60s. And I think it's nice when you're doing a cover to sort of maybe not do something too contemporary, because you don't want to step on anyone's toes. And I like to do sort of very different versions, so mm-hmm. it's not too similar, because otherwise I don't really see the point of
right.
the cover.
Right.
So I've sort of changed, I very much like changed the tempo, changed the feel. So with the Supremes cover, I straightened it up, so it's not sort of swingy anymore. It's kind of straight in the Wall style, which is all very much like very straight and regimented. And yeah, the Karen Dalton cover again, it's a lot more melancholy than the original.
Really? Because the original
it's quite
pretty sad stuff.
That's true. It is sad. Maybe even more sad. When I play it, I actually love playing it live, and I sometimes well up a little bit. It's,
okay.
Beautiful lyrics. I love that song.
But the new EP called Shoestring, which is out here on April 2nd, these are all original songs.
Exactly. The five songs, all our songs, yeah.
And how much of the playing on the record is you?
Most of that, but the guys are playing some bass and guitar and keyboard parts. But when I started writing the songs, I very much layered up stuff, and then the guys have come in, and now we're imagining how things are going to be live, so we're kind of thinking about that, and we know what our setup is now. So it's nice to have everyone lending parts and stuff.
Well, speaking of live, Wall is performing for us here in our Soundcheck studio. You want to do Place Too Low next?
Yeah.
All right, it's another live performance from Wall here in the Soundcheck studio.
Try to keep my thinking down. Took some time to work it out. Never in a place too low. In a house up on a hill. Called out to me that I should know. With a whisper. Being so
oh.
That is Wall live on Soundcheck with a song called Place Too Low. Her latest EP is called Shoestring, and we'll have more from her and her band in just a moment. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The English singer-songwriter Lila Foy and her band are here in the Soundcheck studio today. Lila again records under the name Wall, and she's here playing songs from her latest EP called Shoestring, which is out now. Here is Wall with a song called All Alone, live on Soundcheck. That is Wall, live on Soundcheck with the song All Alone. Once again, Wall is the name of the project of singer, songwriter, keyboardist, guitarist Lila Foy, with Dan Bell and Ollie Deacon helping out on keyboards, guitars, bass, backing vocals. And so, Lila, you and the boys are here in the States in part because you went to the South by Southwest Festival recently.
Yeah.
Is this your first time in the States?
Not first time in the States, but first time playing with these guys here. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So how did South By go?
It was great. It was a whirlwind. It was crazy.
How many shows?
Six shows. Yeah, one day we had three. So we were just in the van, unloading on stage, loading the van. You know, it's just relentless.
Did you get any time to see anything?
We saw a couple of things. We had, on our last night at South By, we played at the Central Presbyterian Church, which is a beautiful venue, and we were lucky enough to play with Devendra Banhart. And
who was our on-the-scene reporter?
I heard. I heard about that.
And he didn't realize that was going to happen, but we pressed him into duty, and the results were somewhat comical, but
he's a funny man. So that was a real highlight. That was a brilliant show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so what happens now? The EP will come out. Does that herald a full length at some point?
At some point. When we get back from this trip, going to sort of finish that in earnest, sort of finish writing all the songs. I've got, I'd say, half of the songs ready. So I just need to lock myself away behind closed doors and get that sorted and done.
Well, Lila Foy, Wall, to you and Dan and Ollie, thank you so much for coming in and playing for us this afternoon. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you for having us.
He could be the leader of my army, leaving hell behind me.
Tomorrow on the show, our week-long Writers Club series continues with Pulitzer Prize-winning novelist Juno Diaz. He'll talk about his latest book called This Is How You Lose Her, but he'll also offer up a pick three of some of his favorite music. And we'll revisit our interview with Jennifer Egan about her 2010 book, one of the great rock novels in recent memory, called A Visit from the Goon Squad. I'm John Schaefer. See you back here at 9 tomorrow. This is Soundcheck.